Welcome to the Interior Health Nursing Grand Rounds, a podcast conversation. I am your host, Allison Thomas, and on this podcast, we talk all things nursing and healthcare. I work as the clinical nurse specialist in the Trauma Services Network in Interior Health. Interior Health would like to recognize and acknowledge the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Dakal Dene, Tanaha, Inglekatma, Shawepam, Statliam, Sioux, and Chicoltean nations, where we live, learn, collaborate, and work together.
With me today, we have a returning guest with Shannon Paul Jost, and we have a new guest, Vicky Kennedy. And so I'd like to ask you both if you would introduce yourselves and a little bit of your nursing background and tell us who you are.
Hello, Alison, and thanks. It's great to be here. So my name's Vicky Kennedy. I'm a clinical nurse specialist for the Regional Palliative Care and End of Life Services team, and I'm located on the Sioux Nation, commonly known as Black Country. So I've been nursing for 34 years, trained in New Zealand as a registered comprehensive nurse with a diploma. Several years later, I got my nursing degree in New Zealand. Then in 2013, completed my Master of Nursing from the University of Saskatchewan. My nursing experience includes acute care and medical and surgical, postpartum, long-term care, primary care, and a large part of my career has been in chronic disease management, specifically diabetes education, and then as a COPD nurse clinician for 10 years. I've been in the role of palliative care clinical nurse specialist for the past 8 years, and I keep my hand in chronic disease management as faculty for the RespTrack program, specifically supporting the COPD and education for chronic disease courses.
Hi, thank you, Allison. I'm Shannon Paul Jost, and I am a clinical nurse specialist I work on the long-term care services team. I have been working in healthcare since the last century, since 1991. I've been actually a registered nurse since 1987. I did my undergraduate degree in Alberta at the University of Calgary, and I did my master's degree here at UBC Okanagan in 2014. Throughout my career, I have worked primarily with older adults. I've worked in acute care, community long-term care, in geriatric mental health, geriatric rehab, public health, primary care, chronic disease management. I've worked in chronic disease management, and I've held a specialty in geriatrics for 19 years.
Wow.
So before I became a CNF, I started my specialty.
Amazing. Okay, we're in excellent hands today. Brilliant folks have agreed to come on and talk about serious illness conversations with me. So perhaps we can start at the very beginning. And could you tell me, what are serious illness conversations and what patients should we be having these conversations with?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So serious illness conversations are meaningful conversations that can and should be initiated by any healthcare professional. And it's really to explore and elicit people's values and their beliefs and their preferences regarding healthcare and anything really in life that is important and meaningful to them, so that the healthcare team can then provide goal concordant care. So the Serious Illness Conversation Guide is a step-by-step framework that we have been introduced to, and we have now embedded and to Interior Health. And this is patient-tested language, which is really key, right? It's patient-tested is very key within this guide. And this guide supports a quality conversation covering a number of key components. So we should be having these conversations early with people who have been diagnosed with a serious illness. And we define serious illness in the workshop as a condition that carries a high risk of mortality and either negatively impacts a person's daily function or quality of life, or excessively strains their caregivers. So I think a lot of us working in healthcare are meeting those people every day, right, where that definition of serious illness applies. A simple way to decide whether to have a serious illness conversation with a person is to use a very eloquent, simple tool, which is the surprise question. So as clinicians, we ask ourselves, would I be surprised if this person died in the next 1 to 2 years? And if the answer is no, I would not be surprised, then that is someone that we should be having a serious illness conversation with.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense to me. And then what about, what are some of the key parts of the serious illness conversation, and what really are our goals when we are having these conversations?
Well, there actually are 7 components to the serious illness conversation, which are outlined in the guide. So the first step is to set up the conversation. And then you need to really understand the individual's understanding or preferences for information. So what do they know and what do they understand? And then the next step is to share that prognosis with them. And there are really 3 options in the language for delivering that prognosis. The next step is also then to explore key topics such as fears, where they get their strength from, their critical abilities and trade-offs, and then, of course, their family and how does that play a role. And after you explore those key topics, it's really important to close the conversation by summarizing that conversation and then making some recommendations and ensuring that you check in with the person and affirm the commitment. And the last 2 steps are really around, you know, documenting that conversation and communicating with the team about that conversation. And at the end of the day, the goal is really to understand what matters most to that person and how can we give them the best possible care that aligns with what their wishes are and their goals are at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the goal for a healthcare professional is to understand the individual, as they may not wish to live longer by having medical interventions and treatments, rather than their goals might be to live a fulsome life, which may be shorter without medical interventions.
Maybe this is a silly question, but does the people that we are having serious illness conversations with, are they only with people that we expect to be dying, or are they folks that might be chronically ill for some time in there?
Yeah. So yes, absolutely not with people who are dying. In fact, we've left it too late if that's the case. And yes, when you think about all the people that are living with chronic illness, you know, when we're implementing a palliative approach to care, which this is, serious illness conversations are a significant component of that approach. If we're doing it upstream and early, which means then we'll be having multiple conversations as things change, you know, it is ebbs and flows.
I just want to say, like, from an older adult perspective, because that's primarily the individuals that, you know, I would be seeing in my practice, I think that it's really important to have these conversations because function is really important for that older person. And if we can really tease out and assess from that individual what is important for them and how, you know, how their health is impacting their function and what matters to them as they journey through that illness, I think it's really key and critical that we figure out how that aligns with the care that we're providing them, and maybe not offering them treatments that may not align with if they want to be independent in their home. Long-term care might not be their choice, right? So how can we keep them as independent as possible?
Okay, super. We have so many people. We work in really fabulous interdisciplinary teams. And sometimes we all think that somebody else is having the conversation. So maybe you can provide some clarity and tell me who is responsible to have serious illness conversations.
Yes, sure. So all of us do.
Okay.
All healthcare professionals' responsibility to have these conversations with the people that they are caring for. We talked about a key component being to share prognosis. And there may be a belief out there that nurses in allied health cannot share prognosis. However, within the serious illness conversation guide and having that framework, there are three different options using patient-tested language to share prognosis with two of those options. And that's the uncertainty and the function language, which is well within scope for nurses and allied health. So this makes having these conversations very much within the role of all healthcare professionals, because there is patient-tested and evidence-based ways that we can do that and, you know, use the language that has been tested to do that. So.
And I also think, too, that, you know, part of the reason why we're having this conversation today is really to dispel a myth. This doesn't lay all on the shoulders of physicians or MRPs. This really can be held by all of us and should be held by all of us. You know, healthcare professionals are in good positions to have serious illness conversations. And as Vicky said, you know, it's not a one and done. It's a continuous conversation over the person's illness trajectory.
Mm-hmm. And very often it's somebody other than the physician who spends the most time with that patient or our clients. And the physician might actually be the least ideal person who knows that person the least. So it's nice to welcome other folks into these conversations and really build on that rapport that already exists. So that's exciting to hear about this work that you're doing.
And especially like in the key topics of the serious illness conversation, sometimes you can get into sensitive areas. And so it's important that, you know, you come back and address those and sit with the individual as, you know, they think about what really is important to them.
What happens when we don't have serious illness conversations? Tell me a little bit about, I imagine that there are benefits obviously to our patients and to their family, but I'm also guessing there's benefits to staff. And I'm wondering if you can share a little bit about that.
Sure. So when we don't have these conversations early, periodically, when indicated, and that address quality elements, we risk not providing gold concordant care because we have not done the work of leaning in to actively listen and understand that person's values, beliefs, and preferences. So this in turn can result in aggressive care for people with advanced illness, which can then be harmful and has demonstrated to cause people physical and psychological distress, as well as a lower quality of life. And it also negatively impacts substitute decision makers and those caregivers in terms of resulting in more major depression, lower satisfaction, and distress related to medical decision making. However, when we do have these conversations early, the benefits are plentiful and they are associated with providing enhanced gold concordant care, improved quality of life, fewer hospitalizations, higher patient satisfaction, an eased burden of decision-making for families, and better patient and family coping, to name a few. The benefit to staff is that when these conversations are held, documented, and communicated across the healthcare team, this can then support providing that gold concordant care, which is aligning with the person's wishes. And then staff can feel confident knowing that they are providing an ethical, quality palliative approach to care, which brings a lot of rewards in our profession and what we're doing, right?
Absolutely.
You know, and I think too, Allison, we're not there yet, but in, you know, in an ideal state or in a future state when everyone is having, you know, in serious illness conversations early, you know, it may also benefit, you know, staff and with time, you know, because time is always of a constraint. So if we have them early, then if we know what their wishes are, then we wouldn't be going down avenues of interventions and medical care. The other thing is for those individuals that we're having that serious illness conversation with, we avoid, you know, treatments and interventions that are not in alignment with what they want, and it supports them with how they manage their life and what they and their families want to get from their quality of life.
And it relieves us of sometimes a sense of moral distress when we don't know what our patients, what they would choose for themselves if we'd had those conversations. And then we sometimes feel, oh, I shouldn't say we, I should say I have felt that sometimes, or you feel like you're doing things to this person and you don't know if it's what they would want. And you wish that you had that information. So I imagine that would be quite a positive experience for now to be caring for folks where, you know, everything has been laid out on the table and we've had that discussion and there's a shared understanding of the goals and the priorities. I think that's just super. Perhaps you could tell me, you've done lots of work and talked to lots of folks about serious illness conversations. So are there any common misconceptions that you hear about serious illness conversations?
Yeah. So the biggest misconception that we hear in evaluations, I would say, is the time element. So the average serious illness conversation that takes around 21 to 26 minutes, that's in the literature. I understand that the healthcare environment is stressed and incredibly busy, but I would say that this is a very valuable therapeutic intervention that can be provided by us all. And if implemented early, more and well, then it is upstream and can likely save time down the road, a little bit about what Shannon was just talking about. So I would also say that healthcare professionals should consider time in the context of the population of people who we should be having more of these conversations with, and the fact that we can't afford not to take the time to have early, more and better quality conversations. To manage the time element, there is a wealth of literature demonstrating the importance of and how an interprofessional approach to serious illness conversations can be conducted and shared, with nurses and social workers integral to this work. Another misconception that we hear is that nurses or allied health cannot share prognosis, right? And we've already kind of talked a little bit about that. And the beauty, of course, as we've mentioned, this guide provides the options and the language to share that prognosis in regards to uncertainty and function. And this is related to what nurses and allied health are doing all the time, right, within their scope of practice, you know, to share and speak about. So we shouldn't delay having these conversations, waiting for a physician or nurse practitioner to have the conversation, because there are ways that nurses and allied health can certainly do that. And yeah, so there should not be any delays, and we should all be working together and sharing the conversation and documenting it and communicating it.
And I would also say that, you know, there might be some misconceptions about having serious illness conversations, that they might take away hope, you know, from patients and families. In fact, when we have these conversations, many individuals are very relieved to have the conversations so that they can start to make plans and prepare, and especially if the end is near. Right. So, you know, if they fear that they might be missing out on something like a special occasion, a wedding or birthday or something, you know, if we have these conversations in advance, we can help that individual with their time and with their ability to maybe leave a legacy a legacy, do a legacy planning in place and have something that they can share at that event, even though they can't be there, you know? So I think that, you know, it often, you know, we're not taking away hope. It actually gives hope. And I think people are very relieved. And I think those are some of the myths that we need to dispel when having these conversations.
Beautiful. Okay, now that everybody who's listening wants to be a champion of serious illness conversations, can you tell me about what your workshops are like? And if someone is interested in learning more, how do they access your workshops?
Yeah, sure. So serious illness conversation guide workshops are fun.
Right, Shannon?
So much fun.
Absolutely.
They are 3 hours long, starting with where we present the rationale for having these conversations in the guide, followed by going through components of the guide step by step. And then the second part of the workshop provides an opportunity to practice using the guide in a safe space, which is the best part. And that's the feedback that we get afterwards. You know, the practice part of the workshop was so much fun. It was so valuable. So to attend a workshop, these are listed on iLearn under course ID number 2301. So just go to iLearn, punch in course ID number 2301, and then the list will come up. Click on that and you'll see where the workshops are. They are also listed on the Palliative Education Calendar, which is under quick links at the bottom of the Palliative and EOL care page and clinical care resources on the inside that.
And if you forget all that and remember our names, you can email us.
I wish I could come to one.
You can.
Okay, well, maybe you'll see me there.
Yeah.
Tell me, so I'm aware that this has been one of your big projects that you've been collaborating on for some time. And I'm just wondering if you would share how you started this journey of bringing serious illness conversations kind of to the forefront in IH and what you've achieved so far, because I think you've achieved a lot, and what your plans are for the future for this work.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So Shannon Laurie Verrigan, a nurse practitioner from the Kootenay Boundary area, and Dr. Trevor Jans, also from Nelson, and I had the opportunity to go to the first Serious Illness Conversation Guide Train the Trainer in Vancouver in 2017. At the end of that workshop, we were given some time within our health authority as colleagues to think about together what the next steps might be within our health authorities now that we could facilitate the workshops. So once we got back home, Shannon and I put our heads together and wrote a briefing note proposing to deliver two pilot workshops and evaluate their effectiveness, with a vision to implement them on an ongoing basis across the health authority. So that plan was endorsed, and subsequently we followed through with positive results. And we then developed a knowledge translation strategy together from a system leadership perspective to continue the work. So to date, we have supported delivery of over 100 serious illness conversation guide workshops with over 2,300 clinicians and 500 nursing students trained in interior health. We have facilitated 5 train the trainer workshops, resulting in a pool of over 65 facilitators, including 22 nursing faculty. And this has enabled the nursing schools to embed the training into their curriculum, which has been fantastic. We've also collaborated with 5 divisions of family practice, along with the nursing schools. And we've also participated in provincial serious illness care research, quality improvement initiatives, and community of practices. Shannon and I lead a facilitated community of practice within interior health. And finally, we collaborated with fellow clinical nurse specialists to write a case study regarding the CNS role with implementing the Serious Illness Conversation Guide in our health authority, which was published last year in the Canadian Journal of Nursing Leadership.
Wonderful. And so on a scale of 1 to 10, how proud are you of yourselves about those incredible metrics and all the influence that you've put out there?
Shannon, what do you rate?
I'm going to say 8.5 out of 10.
I think that's pretty good. I rate you 20 out of 10. I'm very impressed.
Well, and one thing I just wanted to share that Vicky didn't mention is that also for this coming year, we've been working with the BC Centre for Palliative Care to implement a quality improvement project. And so we're in the very beginning stages of that, but that will be looking at how to implement that serious illness conversation toolkit. And so that's quite exciting. And it will, in we're hoping, will involve primary care, home health, and acute care, as well as long-term care. But we do know that these conversations should start early, so that primary care, home health area is really a good target to start serious illness conversations.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. That's wonderful. And how about if someone is looking for some more resources around serious illness conversations, where would you suggest they go to have a poke around?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So we have created a serious illness conversation toolkit, which is on the palliative and end-of-life care page in clinical care resources. So that's a repository with a number of resources within it that people can go to. Provincially, there are serious illness conversation resources on the BC Centre for Palliative Care website. And if you're looking even further afield, Ariadne Labs, where the Serious Illness Conversation Guide originated, has several excellent resources. So there's a few places that have really good resources, and certainly within our toolkit on the clinical care resources page, we will be populating that further. And as Shannon mentioned, with that toolkit coming, that will be another excellent resource that goes, you know, beyond the conversation. It goes beyond, you know, really delves into implementing and embedding, having those conversations and practice amongst the healthcare team.
Great. Okay, Vicky and Shannon, was there anything that we missed that you really wanted to talk to the listeners about that we didn't get to cover?
Well, I just want to encourage everyone to come out and have fun with us at a workshop and learn how to have really good early and better serious illness conversations. You know, and if I think if you have these conversations, you'll be better equipped to also prepare yourself and your family. You know, so I want to look at it from an individual perspective as well as from a nursing perspective. So I think come join us on our journey of serious illness conversations.
I can vouch that you are both very fun. So I think that would be a really fun 3 hours. But if it gets anyone there, 3 hours, I think would be a great way to spend the day with the two of you.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us. I really appreciate your time. And I'll just say, as always, thank you to the Professional Practice Office for supporting this project. And just would like to say a big thank you to Dwayne Walwin, who is our sound editor, and he does all the magic behind the scenes with this podcast. And Vicky and Shannon, I hope we'll get to chat with you again soon.
Thank you.
That's all for this episode. Thank you for joining us today. We know you're busy and your time is valuable. Thank you for spending some of it with us. Thank you for your commitment to your profession and to your patients and being a part of the journey of building a culture of excellence around nursing in our health region.